Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Red Sox podcast. We thank you for joining us once again and making us part of your routine, and we are so happy to have you with us. I'm Lauren Campbell. I cover Boston sports for NESN alongside my co-host, Boston Herald Red Sox columnist, Jason Mastrodonato. Jason, how's it going today?
I am doing great, Lauren. I'm doing great.
So I love to hear that. So we have a jam-packed show for you guys coming up. We have some doubleheader talk, Chris Sale update, a very positive Chris Sale update, and as always, our unpopular opinions. But first, I did want to preface this episode by saying we will be discussing Trevor Bauer in our second segment of the show, and we understand that this topic may be triggering to some due to the allegations that have come against Bauer in the coming weeks. We will warn you when that segment is coming up, but we did just want to preface that by saying that right now. Before we get into our show, though, do not forget that it's MLB draft season, and the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast is covering every future of the MLB. Host Aram Layton brings you player interviews and farm system breakdowns every single day. So subscribe to the Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So we're going to kick off this show with a little starting rotation talk, because Alex Cora did not have Garrett Richards in the Red Sox starting rotation after the All-Star break. He mentioned this Tuesday after the game, just completely omitted him from the rotation, which naturally brought up questions, will Tanner Houck be in this rotation? So I'm going to throw it right to you, Jason. Should Tanner Houck be in this rotation?
Tanner Houck should have been in this rotation from day one. I mean, all winter long, my expectation was Tanner Houck was going to be in the starting rotation this year. I didn't think they were actually going to give Nick Pivetta a chance, so good for them. I was wrong about that, and I remember even talking to Chaim Bloom about that at one point in the offseason about, well, why isn't, you know, Tanner Houck should be kind of a shoe-in in the starting rotation. And the argument was, well, we want to give other guys a shot. And if we designate Nick Pivetta for assignment, he has no options left. So we're going to lose a guy. And Chaim Bloom's whole plan all along has been just build up as much depth as possible. And I was wrong. He was right. You know, I got to give it to him. They needed that depth. Nick Pivetta's looked great. And if they didn't have Nick Pivetta, how screwed would they be in the rotation this year? So that was actually a really smart move by them to not kick Nick Pivetta out of the rotation to give Tanner Houck a spot. I don't think there's any question he deserved a spot in the starting rotation to start the year. He was filthy last year. That slider, it's almost like a reverse Chris Sale slider, the way he manipulates it. He throws it at different speeds, just like Chris Sale does. They said, well, he only has two pitches. You know who else throws two pitches? Jacob deGrom, Lance Lynn, all-stars. There are all-stars starters who throw two pitches. That's not really an excuse anymore. I think what they wanted to do was quite clearly preserve depth and maybe delay Tanner Houck's clock a little bit. Tanner Houck, to me, there's no question, is a big league starter. I think he could be one of the best pitchers on the team, maybe a top five pitcher on the team. I'm a little bit concerned that they ruined his confidence by setting him back down, and then he ends up getting hurt. Now he's trying to come back from an injury. That's my concern, and we've seen that before with Red Sox pitchers.
We have, and I know that he needs to build his confidence, especially after getting sent back down to AAA, getting injured, but he's been really, really good ever since returning from his injury. He's looked solid. He's been trying to develop a third pitch, but like you said, Jacob deGrom throws two pitches, and he's absolutely dominant. I think today his ERA went above one for the first time all season, so that's getting Jacob deGrom by just fine, but Houck absolutely deserves to be in this rotation. I think there's room for him. I think this is the perfect opportunity after the All-Star break to bring him up and get his confidence at the big league level, because we saw it last year. We know that he is capable of being a big league pitcher. There's probably no reason why he's not up here right now. But
yeah, no, I thought, given what happened last year, it was almost a sin that he wasn't in the majors the whole year last year. That they brought him up at the end of the year, 21 strikeouts last year in 17 innings, and he gave up one earned run. I mean, it was unbelievable how good he was, and obviously they tanked last year and just didn't want to admit it, but this guy, I think, is a huge piece of their future, and it's crazy because he had a lot of adjustments to make in the minor leagues. It wasn't always easy for him. They kept roping him back and forth, which pitches he was going to throw. Was he a two-seam fastball guy, four-seam fastball? And he's got it worked out. He's a big kid. He's got great mound presence. He looks the part. He's 25 years old. He's ready to go. So I think he's got to, like you said, he's got to get in the rotation, build some confidence in the second half of the season, because I think he's going to be a big part of what they're doing at the end of the year.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of somebody else who needs to build confidence and to make their way into this rotation is Chris Sale. And he's been rehabbing. Everyone knows he's throwing his live BPs. He looks really good. He says he feels great. And today, or Wednesday, it was noted that he'll probably have one more live BP before he starts his rehab assignment. So we know that Chris Sale will want to come back and throw 7 or 8 innings right away. He'll want to throw 100 pitches. He'll want to throw 98 miles an hour. But what are the expectations for when he comes back? Who's the odd man out? Do the Red Sox go with a 6-man rotation? Where does Chris Sale fit into this rotation? Because he obviously does.
Of course. Yeah, no question about it. I think the big thing is when does he come back? What's going on at that time? You know, they're going to want to see Tanner Houck a little bit before that happens. I really hope they don't put Tanner Houck in the bullpen. I think it would be a shame to stretch Tanner Houck out in the minors, bring him back, put him in the bullpen, or do some kind of wacky stuff like they used to do with Daniel Bard and Brandon Workman and Matt Barnes and a lot of these guys who they kind of messed with the early development because it was, oh, you're a starter. Oh, nope, now you're a reliever. Oh, nope, now you're a starter. It's like, these are high-quality prospects. You know, you can't just kind of be roping them around left and right. It works sometimes. Sometimes it kind of ruins the guy. So I hope they don't do that with Houck. I hope they actually give him a rotation spot. And it's obvious that Garrett Richards doesn't deserve it. And I don't understand what the harm is in putting him in the bullpen. I mean, he doesn't like throwing his curveball without sticky stuff anyway. So he's really only throwing a fastball and the slider. 2-pitch pitcher, perfect. You know, throw him in the bullpen. I think he could be decent in the bullpen. It's what the Padres did late in the year last year. You know, Dave Bush, the pitching coach, was asked about that on Wednesday and said that the plan right now is to keep Garrett Richards in the rotation. They like his last start in Oakland. They thought he did a good job. He did fine. He's still not really dominating. He's just grinding out trying to get outs. But if you have guys that are better than him, why not put him in the bullpen, give Tanner Houck a shot, and then see what it looks like when Sale comes back. See who's doing well. Maybe Nick Pivetta's burned out at that point. Maybe Erod still hasn't pitched well and needs a phantom IL stint. You can figure it out on the fly by whoever's pitching worse. But I think step one is Tanner Houck and Garrett Richards out.
And I think, too, the Red Sox have played with pitchers going from starting to the bullpen, from bullpen to starting. We've seen that over the years. We saw that most recently with Nathan Eovaldi. It obviously didn't work out. But
great point.
Nathan Eovaldi is a starter at the end of the day. Garrett Richards, like, yes, he's a starter by position, but, you know, he can't get out of his own way. He's not going long innings. Just give him some, you know, low leverage situations. Give that bullpen an extra arm. And it's just, you have to find use for him somewhere. It's certainly not this rotation. Unless they bring back sticky stuff, then he can kind of get back on track. But it's just, to me, when Chris Sale comes back, Garrett Richards easily is that odd man out. I think that there's no room for him in the starting rotation. And even if somebody gets injured, you could toy with the idea of putting Garrett Whitlock in there. There are options. But now it's nice because when you do have Chris Sale come back, you have some depth in that starting rotation. You have some options. You have some choices to who to put in the bullpen, who to put in your starting rotation. But Dave Bush said today, too, that he wants Sale to be capable of throwing 5 to 6 innings when he returns. I think, to me, that just screams lengthy rehab assignment, and that's fine. I want Chris Sale to be as close to 100% as possible before he returns. But we know what kind of person Chris Sale is. He's going to go out in a second rehab and be like, I'm throwing 6 innings today. I don't care what anybody says. You're not taking me out of this game. But I want him to, you know, 4, maybe 5 rehab starts. I just want him to be at his best when he returns to Boston.
Yeah. It's going to be hard if he makes 2 or 3 and they're really good and he feels really good. And they're like, well, stay down here. And he's like, but, you know, I'm throwing 97 miles an hour. Get me up there. I think it's important here that we don't read into the radar gun because we made that mistake with Chris Sale before in 2019. I mean, it's hard to forget that second game of the season in Oakland, he's thrown 89 miles an hour and actually threw a good game. They almost won the game. He threw 93 miles an hour was his average fastball all year and actually had a pretty decent year. It wasn't a Chris Sale year, but he had a 17 strikeout game averaging 93 miles an hour. Obviously, he's averaged 95 in the past and is great years is average 95. Some guys come back, they average 96, 97 again. John Lackey, you know, obviously had a lot more velocity when he came back from Tommy John. I don't think it matters that much with him. I think his bread and butter is his slider anyways. He figures out how to make it work with whatever velocity he's got. So my biggest fear is that they're going to pay too much attention to the velocity. Oh, he's throwing 98. He's ready. Let's bring him up. Or, oh, he's throwing 92. Let's keep him down there until he's got his arm strength back. I don't think that really matters. And then you start messing with him, and maybe he's trying to give more effort than he needs to give. I think let's just forget about the velocity with him. Let's make sure he feels good, he looks good, and then go from there.
Yeah, for sure. And the radar gun is a really, really good point because, like you said, if they start messing with him because he's not throwing 98 and he's throwing low 90s, that could easily get inside his own head and he wants to go out there and throw even harder, mess up his arm, that causes a setback, we lose him for the season. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to lose Chris Sale again for a season, even though last year was a wash, didn't pitch, whatever. But you don't want to lose him for any longer than you already have. The playoffs are slowly approaching. We're in the almost official second half of the season. He needs to be, as like I said, as close to 100% as possible. He needs to be Chris Sale that everyone knows the Chris Sale he can be. But I still think we're a good, I don't know, I'd say 5 to 6 weeks away from seeing him.
Oh, okay. I would say 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay. I like cautiously optimistic. I mean, this way I don't have my hopes too high. So if he does come back in 4 weeks, I was like, yes, that's so much sooner than I thought. But coming up, we're going to tell you what we wrote today and discuss if 7-inning doubleheaders are ruining the game. Okay, I need to read fully loaded. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Fully Loaded Chew. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long-cut, and pouches that give you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz you're used to without the tobacco. It's available in 9, yes, 9 flavors. Fully Loaded Chew is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine. It's the purest form of nicotine available. It's the only moist nicotine patch on this market. All other nicotine pouch... I'm going to start that over. It's the only moist nicotine pouch on the market. All other nicotine pouches are dry, white pouches. Nothing dips, spits, and packs like Fully Loaded. Fully Loaded Chew is offering the Locked On team listeners a special offer. Right now, you can try a can for just $1. Yes, that's right, $1. Go to fullyloadedchew.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. Just $1, free shipping. All you have to do is use the code LOCKEDON at checkout. This episode is also brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, is your Honda Odyssey an LX or an EX, and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and right in your pocket. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years, and the prices are reliable low for every single customer. They have everything you could need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution for all your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back. And like I said in the beginning of the show, we are about to discuss Trevor Bauer and everything that came out on Wednesday afternoon. So due to the allegations that have been brought against Trevor Bauer in the recent weeks, if you wish to skip over this section, please do. We'll be discussing this for probably about 5 minutes. But if you don't want to hear anything, this is your content warning to go ahead and skip ahead. So on Wednesday, the Dodgers came out and announced that the Trevor Bauer bobblehead night will not happen any longer in August. And so shortly after that surfaced, his merchandise was pulled from the website. So you cannot buy any Trevor Bauer jerseys, any Trevor Bauer jerseys, anything. You cannot buy anything related to Trevor Bauer. This, of course, is stemming from the sexual assault allegations brought against him about 2 weeks ago. The details are extremely graphic and extremely disturbing. He is on administrative leave at the moment. He is eligible to return this coming Friday, but the MLB can extend it for 7 more days. It just needs the approval of the Players Association. So Trevor Bauer, the Dodgers are distancing themselves from him. This probably should have happened a long time ago. I don't think this should have waited until he was on leave. I think once these allegations came out, and these strong allegations came out about all the details, that they should have done this a while ago. Just because he's a star pitcher doesn't give him a pass to continue to pitch for this team.
Yeah, you know, it would have been so easy for them to say, hey, these are really strong allegations. This is not something that the Dodgers support. We're going to look into this because they are, at this point, allegations. Although it's, you know, it wasn't just a person yelling. It was actually a restraining order from the Los Angeles Police Department that would have made it really easy for the Dodgers to just say, Bauer's on leave right now. He's still going to get paid. We're going to put him on leave for a moment. We're going to investigate and see what happens. Would have been really easy for them to do that. Obviously, they didn't do that because baseball and so many other sports, but especially baseball, has gotten to the point where nothing matters except talent. And it doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you do. If you have talent, you're in. And this was entirely predictable, right? Like, this is a guy who was notorious for harassing women online. You could go and find the screenshots. He's deleted most of the tweets, but he's harassed plenty of women online. You know, he mocks people who identify as trans or non-binary. He enjoys tearing people down. So it's not exactly a surprise that he mistreats women outside of the ballpark or outside of Twitter. This is who he is. And the Dodgers knew that when they signed up. And they should have been totally prepared for a situation like this with him. And it would have been so easy for them to say, all right, we're going to investigate this. But they didn't. And it ends up being a situation where MLB has to come in and do their thing. Now, I think Major League Baseball is actually kind of in a tough position here because they don't have a right to actually suspend anybody for domestic violence. What happens is they basically get their players to plea to a certain penalty based on what other players have plead to in the past. There is no agreement with the players' union that allows players to be suspended for domestic violence. So what they do is they say, okay, well, you did this. We think this is similar to what Addison Russell did to his girlfriend. So we're going to give you the similar punishment as we gave Addison Russell. And the player can come back and say, well, I actually think it's not that bad. And they'll say, okay, fine. We'll let you plead down. Would you accept half of that? And the player will say, okay, I'll accept that. And then they punish him. So I got a feeling Trevor Bauer is going to fight this. This isn't going to go away because he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's just going to plead to a punishment.
No, absolutely not. I think he'll completely fight this. He'll appeal anything, any suspension, any fines, anything. And this also, I mean, you mentioned it, that it speaks to MLB's problem here, that they need to find a way to punish these players who get these allegations brought on them. They get accused of assault, domestic violence, sexual assault. There needs to be some sort of consistency. I know that every case is different. Not every single case is the same. I mean, we saw Aroldis Chapman used a gun, allegedly shot at his girlfriend 6 times. We have the Addison Russell situation. No two situations are the same. But it just allows these players to essentially get away with a slap on the wrist. 60 games, 100 games, they're back as if nothing happened. I want all the details to come out. I want to make sure that we believe the right person in this situation. It's you never want to just jump to conclusions. But with the restraining order was granted, there was pictures, there was all these details that were just too graphic for the Dodgers not to do anything. And that's exactly what they decided to do. Dave Roberts came out and said it's out of our hands. And I don't know if they were bound by MLB, were they legally some legal thing they couldn't put Bauer.
No.
Okay, so there is nothing like
not.
That.
No.
Okay, so that's completely then on the Dodgers, because if I'm Dave Roberts, I don't care how good one of my pitchers is. It's easy for me to say I'm not an MLB manager. I'm not managing these superstars. You need to do something because all eyes are on you. You're the spotlight. It couldn't be brighter. And you're like, yep, he's pitching. It's out of our hands. When you made a lineup change that very day, like 20 minutes before the game. So it's very much in your hands. And I truly hope that Bauer's leave gets extended. I hope the Dodgers continue to distance themselves until this case is cleared, because that's best thing for Bauer. It's the best thing for the Dodgers. Get all of the distractions out of the game. while this is getting settled. And then it comes down to, okay, he's found guilty. Now what? What is his punishment going forward?
And that's going to be the tough part for Major League Baseball, is they only are allowed to put them on leave for 7 days. That's what's been negotiated. And again, they have no right to actually suspend the player for this. They have to get him to plea. So after these 7 days are up, if they don't feel like they have enough evidence to get Trevor Bauer to plea to something, he's just going to go back to work. Unless the Dodgers can convince him to step aside, or if the Dodgers can find a way to suspend him, which I believe the Dodgers can. I believe it is in their power, if they want to suspend him, that they can. They might have to pay him. I'm not sure how that works, if they can suspend him without pay, or say that he violated the terms of the contract and suspend him without pay as opposed to with pay. But I think this is going to end up being in the Dodgers' hands. I just don't see MLB operating fast enough to be able to suspend him. And to get him to plead to suspension in that time. So it's probably going to come down to the Dodgers and what they want to do. And the fact that they're already taking his stuff out of the team stores. I mean, when a team says, we don't even want to make money off of you anymore, I think that speaks pretty clearly that they're going in the... Who knows why it took them this long to do it, but they're clearly going in the direction of, we're going to try to separate ourselves now.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm not in the business of starting rumors here, but nothing good ever comes when you're trying to not make money off that player, because Bauer is a person who brings in money. He was very vocal on social media. He had his vlogs, and he was very appealing to MLB fans, whether you're a casual fan, whether you're a diehard fan. People were chasing after Trevor Bauer in free agency, and they wanted him on their team. And now it's almost like, thank goodness, because it's just a distraction. It's unnecessary. And the Dodgers absolutely should have done something way sooner. Better late than never, I suppose. But in something like this, it's better to act sooner. And now on a more lighthearted note, 7-inning doubleheaders. So Rob Manfred loves to really not make the game of baseball any better. So 7-inning doubleheaders, they are new, and if you obviously play a doubleheader, instead of playing the 9-inning games, you play 2 games, 7 innings, that's it. So I personally hate them. I think they're stupid. If I am a fan who has tickets to a random Thursday night game, and I'm super excited, first game of the season, and the game gets rained out, the game on Wednesday night gets rained out or inclement weather, whatever, has to get postponed to Thursday, and MLB is going to tell me that I paid full price for my ticket, I only get 7 innings of baseball, probably only get 7 innings of baseball, I'm going to be pissed. I want to watch 9 innings of baseball. That's why I'm at a baseball game. That's why I love covering baseball. It's one of my favorite sports, and I don't like them. Maybe they're better for the players. I hate them. I can't say it enough how much I despise this rule change and how I feel it's taking away from the game.
I like it.
No!
I really like it. It makes extra innings so exciting. And you know what? It puts pressure on teams in the 7th, 8th, and 9th to make something happen. I mean, you know there's going to be chaos in extra innings. I mean, there's a high percentage a team's going to score very quickly. It's why we haven't seen the Red Sox play more than 12 innings this year. It just happens so quickly. You have to change the way you're managing the game. And especially when you look at the Red Sox team, this Red Sox team would not be in first place if there were no 7-inning doubleheaders and there were no man on second in extra innings, which is what I was just talking about. I don't know why I thought we were talking about that. My brain immediately went to the man on second in extra innings.
Another terrible
same thing,
rule.
I like them both. See, the Red Sox would not be okay right now because they don't have the pitching depth, right? Like, we talk about Matt Andrees being, you know, pretty bad pitcher at this point. Yoxel Rios not being able to hold the lead when they've given him a chance to do that. They don't have depth. Now, you want them to play more innings already than they're already playing, and you want the games to be longer and not to have a guy on second in extras, they're going to burn through guys. Like, these rules have so much helped teams that don't have a lot of pitching depth like the Red Sox. That's not even why I like it, though. I like it because it makes the game more exciting, in my opinion. The problem is, and Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post wrote a great column about this, which is why we're talking about this today, is you have fans that are paying, like you said, they're paying to get into these games. Well, now all of a sudden, there's a lot of rain. We're going to cancel the game. But, hey, your ticket's valid. Come back a month later when we play a doubleheader. Oh, only problem is now instead of this game being at 7 o'clock, it's actually going to be at 1 o'clock. And if you do want to change your life and make plans and take off of work to come to this game at 1 o'clock, it's only going to be seven innings. So now you're kind of screwing the customers. And when they made this rule was made for COVID times. There were no fans, but there are fans now. So, you know, I think that's why people are having a hard time with the seven inning doubleheaders right now, is you're paying money and you're not getting your money's worth.
Yeah, and it's hard too. Some people might not be able to go to the next game. I mean, there's ways to honor tickets without, you know, if I can't make it to the next game, I want to be able to have my tickets honored for another game, or maybe I'll just sell my tickets. I don't know. I think there's plenty of ways to go about it. I do like that, you know, it can add strategy with fewer innings, kind of in-game decisions, managing decisions. It certainly adds strategy. Maybe I'm just a baseball purist and I just don't want anything to be done. I don't know. But to that New York Post column, there was this great ultimatum, or would you rather question. Would you rather have admission to 2 7-inning doubleheaders or have 9-inning doubleheaders, but you would need separate tickets? So you would have to buy tickets to the 1 o'clock game and the 7 o'clock game, or you could have one ticket that gets you into both 7-inning doubleheaders.
I would say one ticket to both 7-inning doubleheaders. What would you choose?
I would do the same, which I feel like makes me sound like a hypocrite because I just said how much I hate the 7-inning doubleheaders, but I'd get 2 baseball games. So I think I would just rather my ticket go farther and be able to go see 2 baseball games, especially if I'm in Boston. I love the bar scene, the restaurant scene around Fenway. I absolutely love it. I mean, I also just love the city of Boston, so I feel like I could leave Fenway, go get some pizza, go get another beer, yeah, and then just go back. So I would absolutely take single admission to both games.
So, but the thing about that is both of those are better than what we have, right? A single admission to 2 7-inning games or a separate admission with 2 9-inning games are both better than the current situation.
Oh, 100%.
Which is single admission to 1 7-inning game.
Yeah, it's so absolutely better, which this should happen right now. So, Rob Manfred, if you're listening, do it, please. And now moving on to what we wrote today, and I know that Jason and I wrote about similar topics today. So, what did you write about today, Jason?
I wrote about Eduardo Rodriguez, and I know we wrote about similar topics, but maybe a little bit different. Well, you go first.
So, I wrote about his post-game comments from Wednesday. The Red Sox did lose 5-4. Erod pitched fine. He did give up 9 hits, 4 and runs over 5 innings. So it obviously was not his best. He's kind of struggled lately and just really hasn't been able to find too much of a groove. So he was asked after the game kind of how he felt for his first half of the season, because he will not pitch again until after the All-Star break. And he just said he feels like he's grinded. Every start he's gone out and grinded. Even Alex Cora said his pitches, his stuff is there. It's just he made good pitches. It's just the result they don't like. So Erod was very honest. He's always honest in his post-game press conferences. He never tries to make excuses. And, you know, he said that he just made a couple bad pitches. Alex Cora said he wishes he could have those pitches back. But just that, I really like that he said that he grinded, because I think that's the perfect way to describe his first half of the season. He won 5 games, started 5-0, and then just kind of fell into the slump. And he never once made an excuse. And he went out there every single start, grinded away without fail. And even if it wasn't the result, he still put in his work, came out 5 days later, and did it all again. And he went like 7 straight games with no decisions, and he was just like, I grinded, man.
Right. No, I definitely appreciate the honesty. I think, you know, there's a lot going on here. First of all, they keep saying he has good stuff. And in some ways, you can look at it and say, yeah, he's still getting a lot of strikeouts. He's getting a lot of swing and misses, and he's not giving up a ton of hard contact. My biggest concern with him is that his changeup, which has been his best pitch since he came into the league and really is the pitch that made him a big leaguer, was considered one of the best changeups in the league for a long time, is getting hit. And, you know, Otani destroyed that changeup today. And it wasn't even a terrible pitch. It was high, but it was inside. Otani's obviously, I'm going to say this over and over again, Otani's the best hitter in baseball, guys. He's the best hitter in baseball. He's averaging a home run every 9 at-bats. It's the best pace since Barry Bonds. Okay, so he turns on a changeup better than anybody, but it wasn't a terrible pitch. But this is a pitch that's supposed to be his bread and butter, that he's getting hit at a 280 clip. Slugging percentage of 400 is not too bad. But 280, only 15 strikeouts on the pitch this year. That's usually his pitch. That's his strikeout pitch. So that's a little bit concerning. And the other part of the story is, He's a free agent at the end of this year. So I don't think it's a huge deal that he had a terrible first half. I think he comes back and is fine in the second half. As long as he's decent in September and has a role in October, he'll make his money. I really think he will, because teams, they're going to pay for the workload he's put in previously. They're not going to care too much about what he did in the first half of a season after missing a whole year due to myocarditis. He needs to get better. The changeup needs to get better. And if he's not better by the end of the year, he's going to cost himself a lot of money.
Yeah, he is, and I know that he can change his stuff. I mean, he looked so good in the first few games, 5-6 games of the season, and it's just a matter of making a few key adjustments, and he's going to be fine. I hope so, anyway. All right, and coming up, your favorite, our unpopular opinions, and, of course, some positive news to end the show. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action right here at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sports book experts. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. All right, welcome back. So now we are jumping to our unpopular opinions. And I have one that's a little spicy this week. So, Jason, I'm going to have you go first. So the listeners can not be so mad at me and be seething over my unpopular opinion.
Oh, I can't wait to hear your spicy unpopular opinion. Here's mine. I don't like taunting in baseball. I don't like it. I'm not saying I don't like bat flips. All for the bat flips. I'm all for celebrating. Celebrate as much as you want. Have fun on the field, as much fun as you want. I used to love when David Ortiz would flip his bat and celebrate. That's fine. But when you start taunting other players, now let me take you to Monday night. We've talked about this in our first episode. Adam Ottavino gets Shohei Ohtani out, final out of the game, barely, hung a slider, barely gets him out on a ground out. As Ohtani's running to first base, he's waving in his face and saying, "Happy birthday, bitch," to Ohtani, waving in his face to end the game. Now what happens 2 days later? Ohtani shoves it up there, you know what's in the second game of the series, 7 innings, gets the win, comes back on day 3, and hits a home run that ends up being in the inning that the Angels tied the game, and then they win by 1 run, and Ohtani's right in the middle of it. You wake a sleeping giant when you do that, and now you look stupid. The Red Sox look so stupid for taunting Ohtani, and then you go back to Alex Cora before the first game of the series. He's not the best hitter in baseball. Ohtani takes you deep in a decisive one-run game. He takes you deep to win the series, and he's not the best hitter in baseball. And I'll leave you with this. This is Christian Arroyo, second baseman for the Red Sox. This is what he said after the loss on Wednesday. He said, "You look at the first game to end the game, in everyone's mind, we're like, okay, Ohtani's up to the plate. We've got runners at first and second. It's a tie game. That's the kind of stuff you dream of." It wasn't a tie game. They were down one, and they needed a run. But anyways, that's the kind of stuff you dream of. I think after that last play that we made, I think the emotions were just like, okay, we got him out. Thank God we had the shift there. You're almost in awe. So there were so many emotions there, and then what happened? Then Ohtani comes back and kicks your butt the next 2 days. So, you know, don't you want to celebrate getting him out? Celebrate. You want to wave in his face and tell him happy birthday, bitch? Well, Ohtani got the last laugh.
He did. I'm all for friendly taunting. I think there's a line that shouldn't be crossed. I don't think Ottavino crossed it, but now, like you said, the Red Sox look silly because Ohtani just came back out and just said, "You can taunt me all you want. We're going to win the series." So, whatever. I mean, go. Just be nice. That's my.
I don't think they crossed the line. No, this is my personal opinion. I've never played professional sports, but I played on a lot of sports teams, and I never enjoyed taunting other people individually because they're gonna come back and get you at some point. So have fun, win the game, but I don't know about the individual taunting. So the Red Sox deserve what they got this series.
Oh, 100%. And so my unpopular opinion has to do with E-Rod, and I know that I just said I love that he grinded out. I love that he grinds every start, every outing. That he takes accountability. Love that. However, when Chris Sale comes back, I believe he should be the third starter in this rotation. I don't.
Whoa!
Shocker. I don't think he's a number one starter. And I know that obviously he missed his first start with dead arm, and he was set to be the number one starter because he looked great in spring training. He looked really good after missing all of last year. I get that. I don't think he's an ace. I don't think he's a number one starter. I think he's a fine pitcher. He's obviously a solid starting pitcher, but I don't think he's a one or two guy. I think he's your third. I don't want to call him a fourth. I think that's too low, but I think the middle rotation kind of guy, I think that's where he belongs. And if he keeps this up, I think Eovaldi should jump to number two when Chris Sale comes back. It's Sale, Eovaldi, Rodriguez, Pivetta, and then Hauk or Perez. I don't know. Let's just keep Hauk out of it because we don't know if he's going to be in this rotation, even though he deserves to be.
So Erod's going to have to make a lot of improvements if he's going to be the number three starter. So do you want him to be the number three starter as soon as Sale comes back, or you're saying like in a playoff series you think he'll be the number three starter?
Definitely in a playoff series. I want Chris Sale to come back and be the guy, the number one guy. I don't know if that's realistic, but if the Red Sox are comfortable with putting Chris Sale number one, yes, absolutely. As soon as Chris Sale comes back, bump Erod down to number three.
So it doesn't really matter in the regular season, right, which number you are. It all gets messed up anyways. Like, coming out of the break, if Aldi's not the number one starter coming out of the break, they're giving him a few days extra rest because he's pitching the All-Star game. So, you know, the numbers don't really matter in the regular season. I think when you get to the playoffs, that's obviously when it matters. So Rodriguez is going to have to make a lot of adjustments before he ends up being a guy that is your number three starter in the postseason. He's going to have to look a lot better than he looks now. I could see it. I don't think it's a crazy take, Lauren. I don't. I could see it happening.
I appreciate that. I'm glad that you're not holding me to the stake with, you know, burning fire. I'm glad, because I thought in my mind it sounded a lot spicier, but.
It is spicy. I mean, Pivetta's pitched great. Tanner Houck, I'd take right now over Erod in the current form. But if you're betting on who's going to be in the playoff rotation, I could see betting on Erod as number three. I could see it.
Well, why don't you go to Bet Online and then just do it there, right? put your money where your mouth is.
Perfect.
Let's get off this these spicy takes, and let's end this show on a positive note. So for me, it's Christian Arroyo. He spent some time on the IL. He really hasn't been able to catch a break this year, getting hit on the hand, separate hit both times, two times, IL stints, left and right, it seems like, even though it's only been two. But he has come back and just absolutely not missed a beat. He looks good. He looks happy. He's obviously healthy, which is the most important thing. And he's coming in clutch for the Red Sox, just like he did before he went on the IL. So I am very happy for Christian Arroyo. I'm glad he's not, as of right now, Wednesday, being in a slump. He looked great in Wednesday's game, and he's just... he's grinding every game. He's out there, and he's just happy to be here. So very happy for Arroyo to just look like he never went on the IL.
It's always impressive when guys come off the IL and hit well. Arroyo's certainly been a pleasant surprise. I didn't think he was going to be a useful player on this team, maybe just like a bench player. And, you know, I still wonder if he's going to be the kind of guy who's starting at second base in a playoff game, but they got some time to figure that out.
Yes.
All right, my positive note we'll end the day on is... the Japanese sensation, there we go, Hirokazu Sawamura. I love the moment before Wednesday's game when Ohtani goes over to introduce himself to Sawamura instead of the other way around. And by the way, Sawamura's got the better ERA between him and Ohtani this year at this point. But this is a guy they signed for $1.2 million, and he's 33 years old, coming over from Japan. You don't know what you're going to get. What a signing this guy has been. I mean, his splitter averages 92 miles an hour, which is, I believe, the highest average velocity of any splitter in baseball, perhaps in years. I know Adam Ottavino was talking about this recently because he looked it up. He said it's one of the best splitters he's seen. Reminds you a lot of Koji Uehara, which is crazy that they got this guy for $1.3 million. He does get hit hard when he gets hit. The average exit velocity against him is like very high. The hard hit percentage, all the baseball savant stats are not good. But he just knows how to pitch. He gets guys to chase that splitter, and he's been remarkable. So this guy, I think, you know, I don't know if he's going to continue to dominate the rest of the season. Maybe some guys catch on and things happen and it changes. But right now, 40 strikeouts in 30 innings, he's been tremendous.
He has. And what a turnaround, because I feel like right in the beginning of the season, he did not look good. He was giving up home runs. He just didn't look confident. And something happened, and he looks like the pitcher they expected him to be. So it is wonderful to see him performing well at this level and just being the pitcher that the Red Sox need in a bullpen that needs a little bit of help right now. But we will end the show there. Always love to end on a positive note. Be sure to return to us Friday, as Rob Bradford from WEEI will be on the show. He'll be our special guest, our first guest after the relaunch. So we're super excited for that. Unfortunately, I will not be on the show. Jason will host it solo, but he will be joined alongside Rob Bradford. So do not forget to tune in Friday morning. Also, you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at LaLaLaLauren, three laws, and then Lauren with four R's. Also, connect with us on the Locked On Red Sox Twitter account at LO_Red Sox. Jason, where can our listeners find you?
You could find me in the Boston Herald or on Twitter at J, the letter J, Mastro Donato.
Love that. Yes, be sure to check out all the coverage in the Boston Herald as well on NESN.com. We have you covered on all of your Red Sox needs and, of course, right here on Locked On Red Sox. And if you love listening to us, subscribe and follow the show so you can get the latest episodes as soon as they are available. And don't forget to check out the Locked On Today podcast, which they talked about why one NFL playmaker wants out of New England. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow.